Good afternoon, Senator Olson here, chairing the Community and Regional Affairs Committee meeting this afternoon. Today we have Senator Joe Thomas, Senator Tom Cowdery, Senator Gary.
I'm big. I'm not that big, Mr. Chairman.
My apologies, Senator Wagner. Senator Tom Wagner, and we have Senator Gary Stevens here this afternoon. We're going to get started here, and today we're going to be looking at a Senate bill that was just introduced, Senate Bill 161, and today we have my main person that's working on that, and that's Ginny Osterman is going to be presenting the bill before us. We have a number of people that are here in the audience. We have a number of people online that are going to be taking and giving testimony in reference to the bill. But before we start that, we want to make sure that people are aware of their cell phones to make sure that they are either off, or if they are on, don't make it so that static can't be picked up by the PA system, because it interferes with those people that are online whose only connection with us has to be what they can hear. And if it's full of static, then it's pretty difficult for them to go ahead and have all their attention here. And so with that, we'll go ahead and get started. And who those people that are going to testify both online and here, make sure you identify yourself to us, tell us who you're with, and then go ahead with your testimony. If you go ahead, Ms. Osterman.
Ginny Osterman, staff to Senator Donnie Olson. SB 161, an act relating to the Alaska Coastal Management Program. In 2003, the passage of HB 191 instituted significant changes to Alaska's Coastal Management Program. Sponsored by the governor, these changes restricted participation by local communities in state and federal actions in the coastal areas of their localities, including the review of permitted activities. Regulations adopted by the Alaska Department of Natural Resources severely limited the ability of coastal districts to establish enforceable policies to address effects of projects on coastal resources and uses. Indeed, the significance of the program changes stimulated a formal review by the Federal Office of Oceans and Coastal Resource Management as to its compliances with the National Environment Policy Act. Final acceptance of the new Alaska Coastal Management Program did not occur until December 29, 2005. Since then, Alaska's coastal districts have faced a continuing struggle with controversy, confrontation, and delay by the Office of Program Management and Permitting, OPMP, located in the Department of Natural Resources, in achieving suitable management plans. Their complaints are with regulations that they believe go beyond the intent of the statutes enacted by HB 91. OPMP's interpretations of these regulations and the detail and extent of information required by the OPMP for justification of the district's management plans. In effect, some coastal districts have yet to gain approval of their management plans. Formerly, disputes during approval of district plans were amicably resolved by the Coastal Policy Council, a body made up of state and coastal district representatives. Since the council was disbanded by HB 191, all decision-making power is concentrated in a single agency. This bill is an attempt to correct the inadequacies of the sweeping changes brought about by HB 191. I do not wish to turn back the clock to what was before. Instead, this bill retains the program in the ADNR while resolving some of the major problems with the changes to the coastal program. I believe SB 161 can achieve a better balance and cooperative relationship between the state and its coastal communities.
Thank you, and we probably should go ahead and accept as our working document SB 161 / alpha.
So move, Mr. Chairman.
No, it's / C bullet.
Okay, our working document is going to be CS for SB 161 / C. Senator Stevens.
So move, Mr. Chairman.
Any objection? With that, we'll go ahead and do we have any questions of the bill sponsor? Senator Wagner.
I think the minutes, unless we rescind our prior action, I think the minutes are going to show that we got two bills in front of us as working documents.
Well, let's go ahead and rescind our action for a second.
So I would move to rescind the first motion, which adopted Senate Bill 161 / A as a working document.
Any objection? With that, we'll go ahead and go on and work with / C then.
Yeah.
Do we have any questions of the bill sponsored by any members of the committee?
Mr. Chairman?
Senator Stevens.
I was a fan of the Coastal Policy Council, and that was disbanded by HB 191. How does this bill resolve the issue of the council being there to help resolve issues? How does this bill resolve issues without that council being there?
Ms. Osterman?
Jenny Osterman first, Senator Olson. The CS that you have before you will bring back the Coastal Policy Council. That's the plan. And today we have this before us as a starting point to try to repair some of what has happened since the Coastal Policy Council was disbanded.
Mr. Chairman, I think it's a good idea, and the Coastal Policy Council will be pretty much what it was before. Is that the intention?
Well, that still remains to be seen. But
thank you.
Any further questions of the bill sponsor? Okay, with that, we'll go ahead and have the department go ahead and address us with this. Mr. Bates, welcome to the seat, and how many people are going to be testifying on the department's behalf?
Good afternoon. My name is Randy Bates. I'm the director of the newly established Division of Coastal and Ocean Management within DNR. At this point, I will be the only one testifying from the state. We do have Deputy Commissioner Dan Easton here from DEC, and we've also got the Department of Law online in case questions do come up from the committee. Is it okay, Chair, if I set some materials on top of the laptop here?
Can you move that out of the way, please? I think it has to do with the previous committee that was here, because I see schedule 1 through 5 drugs up there. We're going to take a recess until we get set up properly.
I don't want to reorganize everything. But
I'm sorry.
I didn't realize. I guess we're more technically an at ease.
Okay.
Good.
Senator?
Back on in order. Mr. Bates, go ahead.
Thank you. Again, my name is Randy Bates. I'm the director of Division of Coastal and Ocean Management within the Department of Natural Resources. I am pleased to be here and appreciate the invite from the committee and the chair to speak with you. My comments and perspective come from more than 10 years within the Coastal Management Program, more than 4 years as the deputy director of the agency implementing the ACMP, and the changes that were enacted back in 2003, and most recently as the director of the new agency implementing the ACMP for the future. As described in the chair's letter to DNR Commissioner Tom Irwin, we were invited to testify on 3 things today. Number one, the implementation of the changes to the ACMP, with particular interest in the challenges and the problems of implementing those changes. Number two, the suggestions that could be made to improve the program. And number three, the comments on the work draft for CSSB 161. First, I'll give you a brief overview of the changes and the challenges that we've faced for the last 4 or 5 years. Many of you are aware of what these changes and challenges are. I'll be very brief in these comments. Back in February 2003, Governor Murkowski introduced Executive Order 106. This moved the Alaska Coastal Management Program out of the governor's office and into DNR. Some of the challenges that we faced with that move were our exempt employees were reclassified into a unionized system. Our exempt status became unionized in either the GG or the SU union. We had to write PDs. We had to go through classification. And in fact, we had to interview for our own positions. In many cases, Those of us had been in those jobs for 4, 5, 10, 15 years. We had to compete with everybody else for our jobs. There was no security. Interestingly, we also had to integrate into DNR, which at this point and at that point, it was a very good move. There is a lot of synergy that is created through the Alaska Coastal Management Program and the divisional structure that is within the Department of Natural Resources. So we are pleased to be there, but it certainly took some happening. New letterhead, for example, just some of the minor challenges that we faced. As you're also aware, House Bill 191 was introduced and enacted in May of 2003, Senate Bill 102 in 2005, Senate Bill 46 in 2007, two of which were sponsored by the chair. All of these called for some form or of the reform of the Coastal Management Program. In all, we revised the statutes governing the program. We revised three chapters of regulations that implement the Coastal Management Program. All of those were done within a very, very short time frame. The revisions mandated district plan revisions and amendments. Two of those bills, the statute, Senate bills, allowed extensions for those district plan deadlines. The statutory revisions also mandated a revision to the ABC list, and it included a sunset provision for the ACMP such that the legislature must re-up the program in 2011. Amongst all of that, our governing body, or the federal granting agency, the Office of Ocean and Coastal Resource Management, which is housed within NOAA, has final oversight and approval authority over any statutory or regulatory changes that are made by the program. We had to go through their review and approval process, which included NEPA. They had to conduct an EIS on these statutory and regulatory revisions. Amazingly, and to their credit, the federal agency was able to initiate and conduct the development issuance of an EIS and a ROD within a 6-month time frame. Fantastic, and it saved us and certainly moved the program forward at that point. As you can imagine, over the course of 4 or 5 years, implementing this sort of magnitude of programmatic change, we had a variety of issues and challenges. There are two that stick out that I want to brief you on. The first is with our staffing. And I'm not going to belabor the issue, but when you have a program that is in this much turmoil or that much turmoil, we had some difficulties. 95% turnover since 2003. We've recruited in a 3-year period more than 100 times for less than 30 staff. We had a 33% vacancy rate for 3 years. What this means, as you can imagine putting numbers together, for every 3 desks and workloads, we had 2 people doing it. It created extraordinary challenges to recruit qualified folks, retain them, and get them to embrace the concept of program revisions and do it in a manner that was intelligent and capable while we're working with the coastal districts, while we're working with the federal granting agency. It was a very trying time. I'm just extraordinarily pleased with our staff as they were and our staff as they are. It's been nothing short of a Herculean effort to get us to where we are. As I mentioned, I'm pleased to be here, and there is a variety of reasons for it.
Mr. Bates, if you just hang on a second. Absolutely. Senator Stevens.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Bates, could we get an organizational chart? I get a little confused as to where things fit in your department, and specifically, where is OPMP, and what is your relationship with? Is that a part of your organization, or is that a part of the bigger DNR?
Senator Stevens, through the chair, I would be happy to provide 2 organization charts. One would be the DNR organization chart, which shows the commissioner's office down to the director level, and then if you're interested, the particular line agency organization chart, which is DCOM. And I'd be happy to get that to you. If I could put your question off for a moment, because
oh, sure.
I do address that within the improvements to the program that I'd like to cover.
Okay. Thank you,
Mr. Bates, go ahead.
Thank you. Second challenge, which was really the substantive issue and the one that this bill and the chair want to get at, and that was district plan revisions. We had a very short time frame to write the guiding regulations for the district plan revisions. We had to overhaul those regulations, get them in place, all the while guiding the districts in how to prepare and present the amendments to their programs that were mandated legislatively. The ACMP regulations ended up more stringent than what was intended under HB 191. The coastal districts were limited in their ability to craft enforceable policies that addressed coastal uses and resources that were important to the local residents. This limitation on district enforceable policies manifested itself into severely strained relationships with the coastal districts, particularly between OPMP, DCOM, and many of the coastal districts and the association that represents the majority of them. This also resulted in general apathy from the coastal districts and others regarding the value, role, and influence that the ACMP has and what it could and should be doing for the state as a program. The coastal district plan revisions represented an enormous, extraordinary workload for us. 28 coastal districts coming in at the same time trying to get their plans through. It was a product of the legislation. We handled it. It was done to the best of our ability given the staff that we had at the time. The status of the coastal districts as they stand today. There are 28 coastal districts that are participating in coastal management, meaning 28 of them complied with the mandate under HB 191 to submit their plan revisions. 16 of the 28 have been through the DNR and OCRM review and approval process and are in effect. Activities that occur in those municipalities or coastal districts must be compliant with the district enforceable policies of those coastal district plans. There are 4 of the 28 plans that are pending review and approval by OCRM. They're through DNR and they're back there with OCRM right now. We expect approval no later than February 8th. That'll bring our total to 20 of 28. There are 5 plans that are through the DNR review and approval process and they're pending submission to OCRM, meaning the districts are working on the final plan revisions or getting their CDs in order, making all the changes that were required based on the commissioner's approval. There are 3 plans that remain outstanding. DNR has been through the review and approval process, but the coastal districts have elected to mediate the commissioner's decision, essentially appealing the commissioner's decision to approve or substantially disapprove their plans. That's the status of all 28 districts. Can I answer any questions regarding the challenges before I move on to suggestions? Hearing none. Topic number 2 that we were asked to address is suggestions for improvement to the coastal management program. There are 4 topics I'd like to brief you with. The first is the Division of Coastal and Ocean Management. With the approval of Governor Palin and with the idea coming from DNR Commissioner Irwin, we reorganized the Office of Project Management and Permitting, splitting that office into 2. Now, one of them is the Division of Coastal and Ocean Management. The other component or the other division remains the Office of Project Management and Permitting. Within the original OPMP, there were 2 budgetary components. One of them was large project permitting, which functioned as a coordinating agency for large resource development projects. That had a staff of several, and that was one function of OPMP. The other budgetary component was the ACMP, the Alaska Coastal Management Program. And we took that component, that budgetary component, and its staff of about 35, and moved it into its own division. And we created the division called Coastal and Ocean Management. Our office at DCOM does 4 things. First, we implement the Alaska Coastal Management Program. We implement the Coastal Impact Assistance Program, which was authorized under the Energy Policy Act of 2005. It's about a $3 to $4 million grant every year to the state. We also implement the Coastal and Estuary and Land Conservation Program, which is a land acquisition program run through NOAA. And our office, DCOM, also tracks and addresses initiatives that affect Alaska's oceans. The split There's a variety of reasons why we decided to split OPMP into two divisions, and I'll just briefly touch on a couple of those. First, it allows the director of both OPMP and DCOM to focus on the issues respective of what our divisions do. For me, it's I can focus on the ACMP issues, the reform initiatives, what we're looking at for the future of the ACMP, and our staffing issues and turnover that we face. The ACMP, as its own division or within DCOM, is elevated within the divisional structure to emphasize its equal footing and importance within a division tasked with resource development. Coastal districts have a higher level of a higher director level link within the department structure now. They can talk again directly to me, and whether, you know, being the director, they know they're getting a higher level of authority there, and I have an easier chain of command to the commissioner. And as I mentioned, we're also addressing emphasis areas such as federal ocean, coastal zone management legislation, oceanic observing systems, and various other initiatives. The second suggestion for improvement is another one we're working on currently, and that is stabilize our staffing and our workload. Pleased to say we're nearly full of staff. We have an organization chart that shows 35 positions. I believe we have 32 of them filled. It's one of the few times in the last 5 years that we've been this full. When we have staff meetings, it's great to look around. We've got a qualified, quality group of intelligent individuals. We are training and educating our staff, recognizing many of them are new within the last year or 2 years. There's a lot to learn with this program. We're also working with our participating state agencies to make sure that the ACMP as a network program is implemented uniformly and consistently by ourselves and by the other agencies that participate and implement the ACMP. Our relationship with the coastal districts is improving with our experienced staff and not reduced workload, but shifted workload. We're able to re-engage with the districts on a much different level, and it's not as tense, in my opinion, or as conflictive as it was. The third piece that we're working towards to improve the program is another legislatively mandated provision, which is revise the ABC list. And the ABC list is a list of expedited consistency reviews under the ACMP. And the value of the ABC list is it houses routine and de minimis projects such that if an applicant comes in, they may qualify for something under the ABC list based on standard steps to get them in and out. We can focus our time, instead of on those small routine de minimis projects, we can focus on the more complex, controversial projects out there. It allows us to not spend a lot of time on the smaller projects that are less impactive, but rather focus on the bigger projects. The quicker we can get that done, I think the better off all the reviewers are going to be, the agencies, ourselves, the coastal districts. We want to do it right, and by legislation, including the sponsors, Senate Bill 46, we have until the end of June to get that done. We will get that done. And the fourth piece, which I think is very, very important and substantive to our discussion today, is the reevaluation of the ACMP regulations. And we recognize that there have been challenges. As I mentioned, the regulations for writing coastal district plans was more stringent than what was intended under 191. We recognize that. We want to go back, reevaluate what was done under HB 191 and the promulgation of the regulations governing district plans, and reevaluate whether that was appropriate and what we can do to improve the program. As Commissioner Irwin and respectfully the chair had talked, we intend to formally and openly reevaluate the regs. We want to be able to sit down with all that are involved and all that participate, including the coastal districts, the state agencies, the public, the industry, applicants, everybody that either participates or has a stake in this game, and have an open dialogue, understand what the concerns are, see how we can recraft the regulations to fit and improve the program. We did identify this reevaluation within our enhancement grant program assessment and strategy, which means we have recognized this as a high priority. We recognized this more than a couple years ago. We built it into a five-year document so that we could have funding to do it, and we would have the initiative and ability to get it done within a particular time frame. We are committed to this. We want to reevaluate the regs and make sure that they work for all participants in the ACMP. Those are the four suggestions for improvement initially that we have. Many of those you recognize we're already engaged with. The third item that you ask us to speak to is the comments on the work draft of Committee Substitute Senate Bill 161. We first saw the committee substitute late last week when a couple of the coastal districts forwarded us the draft version that was shared with them. That draft version is the same as you have now, and it's the working draft, version C. We recognize that many of the amendments included in the committee substitute are those that the districts have recommended over the course of the last few years. These issues that the coastal districts have raised are legitimate and important, and DNR is taking them seriously. As I described already, DNR is working to address many of these issues, and we look forward to making progress with the coastal districts to improve the ACMP. Obviously, the CS proposes to address many of the issues by amending the statutes. As I just described, DNR feels that some of these issues can and will appropriately be addressed through the regulatory revisions that we're contemplating and through ongoing dialogue and discussion with the various districts that have raised the issues. I will say I am concerned that some of the statutory amendments proposed in the CS could derail the progress that we're making, and it could jeopardize the success I believe we are having and we will have in the near future. I have read the CS. I generally understand what is proposed and would certainly be happy to talk about any of the sections that you would like to. If it is possible, as a request back to the chair, I would greatly appreciate a walkthrough of the specific sections if you do have questions so that I can understand the sponsor's intent behind the sections, and I'd also appreciate a specific example of that led to the crafting of the amendment. That would certainly, if you're able to share your logic in the crafting, I can certainly lend myself to reviewing it and evaluating it.
With all due respect, Mr. Bates, what amendment are you talking about?
I would generally refer to any of the proposed changes that you have within the CS.
Okay.
I'm not...
Compared to the original bill as it was filed.
Chair.
Okay, go ahead and
continue. There are no amendments that are on the table. I guess I'm talking about the changes you're proposing that are all contained within the work draft.
Okay. Go ahead with your presentation.
That concludes my comments on the version, the CS version. I am here. I will be here for the duration of this hearing, and I'll certainly make myself available in between hearings this week and next week. I understand you intend to hold this again to move it. I'd be happy to answer any questions now or then. Thank you.
Let me just tell you what the reason that the bill was put forward was, because it was pretty evident that after HB 191 was put in place, that the people's ability to go ahead and have some type of control or say was markedly diminished, and that the progress that was put forth by the department was certainly lacking. And that's the thing that I was hearing as I traveled around, not just my district, but throughout the state of Alaska. And because of this lack of progress, whether it's staffing problems, which is not the concern about those people that are being affected by this, but by the people that are trying to get in their ducks in order, that where the rules keep changing, that's the reason that this bill was put in order. So if that's not clear to you, I'll state it again, but I want it real clear as to why I put this bill in. And so with that, I will go ahead and ask a few other questions that I have here that you've already touched on, and that has to do with, I guess, the first part of your presentation, which has to do with, apparently, of the 28 districts that are out there, 16 have been approved? Is that correct?
Senator Olson, yes, that is correct. 16 approved out of 28.
And there are three...
Approved through DNR and OCRM in effect.
Okay, and if you go through the list, there are three that are under mediation?
That's correct.
Can you explain to me how the mediation process works?
Mediation. Senator Olson, once the district got through the submission of their district plan amendment, DNR evaluated its compliance with the ACMP enforceable standards and district enforceable policy writing rules. We develop a recommendation for the commissioner. The commissioner, in this case, for all of these districts, signed off on the DCOM recommendation. For these three coastal districts, it approved some enforceable policies in designated areas. It disapproved other enforceable policies in designated areas. At that time, the coastal district has the regulatory option of selecting mediation to attempt to resolve the issues. Mediation is a regulatory provision whereby we being the coastal district and the state agency DCOM, mutually agree upon a mediator, somebody who has mediation skills, who's trained in the art of mediation. Once we agree upon a mediator, and let me, if I could, use two examples of successful mediation with two coastal districts, the city and borough of Juneau and the Bristol Bay Coastal Resource Service Area. They mediated. We have now resolved their issues and moved beyond mediation. They're now preparing their plan for submission to OCRM. The mediator we selected convened a meeting of the group, being the coastal districts and the state agency. We set the ground rules and then we proceeded with formal mediation. It is not typical mediation as you would expect it under a labor dispute or an arbitration. What we do at the table is sit down and talk about what the requirements are under the ACMP and what the coastal district wants out of their district plan. And in both cases, with Juneau and with Bristol Bay, we were able to arrive at a compromise. The coastal districts have to adhere to certain requirements in order to pass the regulations, comply with the regulations. In many cases, for Juneau and for Bristol Bay, these requirements included mapping issues, legend, how big or how fine is the map going to be, or the colors, or how you distinguish some of these different areas from the others. As it relates to district enforceable policies, we were able to talk about whether their policies were adequately addressed by another state or federal law. For example, a coastal district cannot write a policy on the operational law that the Corps retains authority for. They can't go in and manage wetlands in the same way the Corps does. So to the extent we're able to come to a compromise with the coastal districts on their mapping issues and their district policies, we craft that compromise, come to agreement, and we finalize their plan, and then we both sign off on it. That's what happened in the case of Juneau. That's what happened in the case of with Bristol Bay CRSA. I think we, from the state's perspective, viewed mediation as successful. The coastal district certainly got more than what they originally had, though they had to make certain changes to comply. And we certainly hope that the coastal districts found it to be successful, too. There are three districts, North Slope Borough, Northwest Arctic Borough, and the Bering Straits Coastal Resource Service Area, that have requested mediation. We have just selected a mediator for two of the districts, and I suspect that the third district will opt for the same mediator. And as soon as that mediator and our collective districts are able to get together to discuss first the preliminaries and then second the mediation, we'll make progress.
How long before you think the mediation is going to be finished? When are we going to see a final outcome of this mediation or appeal process that's there?
Senator Olson, by regulation, the mediation can last no longer than 90 days.
Okay.
It's a 60-day time frame with an option for 30-day extension mutually agreed by both the coastal district and the state agency.
So 90 days from now, I can expect that there will be a decision.
It would be 90 days from the date the mediator convenes the first mediation session. So right now we're still in the negotiation with the mediator, and as you can imagine, this mediator has a list of things that they have going on. We do, as do each of the coastal districts. We're trying to find the right time frame to get these done. This initial meeting set up, the first mediation session kicked off. That mediation session itself will kick off the 90-day time frame. Nothing says we have to take 90 days.
Sure.
But if there are amendments to the plan that the coastal district wants to make, sometimes it does take them a little bit of time to get those changes made.
Senator Stevens, you had a question you wanted to ask.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just want to make sure I understand that the OPMP division in two parts, that's already taken place. That was a decision made by the I guess the DNR. So that's done.
Senator Stevens, through the chair, yes. OPMP is a division. DCOM is a division.
And I've got to say, I haven't had a chance to get through this entirely, and look forward to a little more explanation of it. But how do you feel about the reinstatement of the Coastal Policy Council? Is that a necessary step in your view, or do you have some concerns about that?
Again, Senator Stevens, through the chair, you know, we've looked at the provisions that are included in the CS, and at this point, we don't have a position on the reformation or the resurrection of the Coastal Policy Council. There are some provisions that are concerning to us in how the bill is drafted. I think there's some technical flaws that need to be addressed. And again, without understanding what the problem was and why the sponsor wants to recreate the CPC, we're probably not prepared to offer whether this accomplishes that or not.
Thank you.
Any further questions, Senator Stevens?
No, thank you.
Senator Thomas.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm glad to see you've survived all this turmoil. And being from the interior, I don't know if they're challenging your department or me in these questions, but because in the interior we don't have these kind of problems with our land management. So... with that in mind, it seems that you mentioned something about, you know, rating projects to, you know, lessen the workload in some respects. Some would be fairly de minimis, I think you used the term. What do you use as a criteria for something to be considered a minimis type project versus a larger or whatever other term you used?
Okay. Senator Thomas, through the chair. We recognize Fairbanks is not in the coastal zone, but you've got a watershed that drains there.
That's right.
My reference to various projects, and particularly to the ABC list, I'll go there. We've got essentially two types of projects that are on the ABC list. One of them is the A list, which is de minimis, meaning there are no coastal effects to any uses or resources associated with the activity. My memory probably doesn't serve well enough. I believe that burning garbage in a certain size drum is considered an A-listed activity. It does not have coastal effects on uses or resources. The next step, and so that's de minimis, that hopefully helps answer that question. The next sequence of projects that we look at are what we would call routine projects that can be made consistent with the standard alternative measures or stipulations. And so that is, for example, the chair may be familiar with these. There's ice roads, the creation of ice roads in the Arctic. Those are considered a routine project. Although they have coastal effects, and we acknowledge that, the application of certain stipulations regarding water withdrawal, timing, thickness, and other things can be applied to the project such that it's easier to go through review. If the applicant knows what they have to do to comply, they adopt those alternative measures, they don't have to go through the 50-day consistency review. They can get their consistency review the day they walk in the door. They have to then go get the permits from the agencies, but at least they've streamlined through the ACMP process. Does that begin to answer your question, Senator?
That helps. That's right. I didn't realize de minimis was that small of a thing that we're talking about, somebody burning trash.
Yes.
Close proximity to a coast. Okay. Thank you.
Senator Stevens.
Mr. Chairman, just to try to understand this, Randy, you mentioned that, Mr. Bates, you mentioned that the regulations that were drawn up were more stringent than called for by HB 191. Could you tell us what you were talking about there? What regulations? Can you give me an idea? I think that was your comment, wasn't it? Or maybe it was not. No, I believe it was yours. I wrote it down after you said it. The regulations are more stringent than HB 191 called for. What regulations were promulgated that were more stringent than 191 called for?
Right. See if I can get my exact words right. The ACMP regulations were more stringent than was originally intended under HB 191. And the reason I say that is there is testimony on behalf of the administration under HB 191 that talks specifically about the possibility of enforceable policies related to subsistence and related to habitat and related to other issues that are important to the local districts. We fully expected under the legislation that was passed that these types of enforceable policies could and would be written by the coastal districts. As we began to write the regulations themselves were tweaked or became tighter such that the writing of those types of enforceable policies that we contemplated and in fact testified on under HB 191 were no longer allowed. They did not comply with the rules that were written guiding the development of district enforceable policies. So particularly the chapter of regulation 11AAC 114 is the chapter that tightened up the district policies. What we want to do is reevaluate that chapter, reevaluate the state standards that also guide the writing of those policies, and see if there's tweaks that we can make that will open up the door for the districts to write more policies without getting into the duplication of state or federal law. Again, one of the tenets under 191 was get rid of the duplication and the overlap between district policies and the state and federal agencies that are out there. We do not want a state agency duplicating the authority of a federal agency or a coastal district duplicating the operational law of one of our state or federal agencies. Who do you give deference to? Who gets to decide the issue? Most would say it's probably the agency that has the vested authority to do it. And so to answer that question, we got rid of the duplication that was out there. We want to rebuild so the districts can address what's important to them, but we have to do it in a manner that is obviously considerate of what some of the important issues were under 191 and how we want this to proceed.
Senator Stevens, any other?
No, thank you.
One of the questions I have for you is, as far as these regulations go, you talked about a regulation review. Do you have a time frame for that?
Senator Olson, we do have a time frame. The sooner the better. One of the things that you're aware, Commissioner Irwin and you had talked about at one time, was some experience under our belts with implementing the reform of the ACMP so that, for example, at the end of June this coming year, 2008, we would take a break from revisions and implement the program for a period of time just to get some experience implementing it the way it was designed under HB 191. We know there's flaws, but let's get experience, be able to identify the gaps so that when we come back, we're able to clearly and articulately define what we have to do to change the program. I understand from your concerns, and particularly from the letter that you wrote to Commissioner Irwin on November 28th.
Before we have that, does everybody have that in their packet? Letter I wrote to the commissioner on November 28th, 2007. Senator Thomas?
I do.
Senator Wagner? Okay. Go ahead, Mr. Bates.
Thank you. I believe in there you had talked about not wanting to wait longer and initiating these this reevaluation sooner. At this point, we don't have a time frame in mind. Clearly, our biggest priority as a division right now is finishing the ABC list, and that will not be done before the end of June. Staffing, as I mentioned, remains an issue, and I believe it's going to take several of our staff to coordinate some of these meetings, coordinate some of the input with the districts and the other participants in the ACMP, and as such, I want to be able to dedicate them as I need to in order to be successful in this reevaluation. I don't think that waiting a year after June is going to be good enough. I'd like to initiate it as soon as possible. Part of it is workload dictated. And like I said in my opening comments, while I think we have a good plan in place and we're approaching some of these issues, a CS, the creation of a CPC, many of these initiatives in there would certainly take our focus away from getting some of the things done that we're currently working on.
Well, I hear your answer, and I certainly can empathize with your situation, but we still have got coastal zones out there that are in a fair amount of difficulty and a fair amount of confusion. And if you don't have a time frame, I'll tell you the time frame that I've been made to understand, and that's been a year after June 30th, which I find is unworkable from the standpoint. And that's the reason, one of the reasons that the legislation was put in place, is that the time, that's the when the regulations are going to be reviewed. And I just see that as something that's uncalled for. So that's the reason that the bill was put in place. Senator Wagner.
Yeah, this seems like a reoccurring nightmare. I just want to go back. You talked, there are 28 different districts. 16 of them have complied, have finished their rewriting. Okay, I seem to remember that all the districts agreed that if they were given an extension of time, which was, I believe, about 12 months once before, that they could all have their rewritten coastal plans in and made application for approval. Is this not correct?
Senator
Wagner,
through the chair.
I've been seeing this for about the 6 years I've been down here now.
Welcome back to Juneau. As I mentioned, Senate Bill 102 and Senate Bill 46, 2005-2007, co-sponsored or sponsored by Senator Olson, extended the district deadline for submission of those plans, I think collectively by about 18 months, a year and a half to 2 years. It's important to recognize that the deadline was the submission of the plan, not the final approval of the plan, which is where we're at right now. So most of the districts did submit their plans by that deadline. There were some, including the remaining three that are subject to mediation, that did not meet that deadline.
So before we've gone full cycle on the on 191, what 191 brought about, we're being asked to make changes again. And I just, you know, Mr. Chairman, I just got to say, I've never been one to put something in place and before it gets finalized, want to start changing it again. I know this is a legislative way a lot of times, but I think maybe we're jumping the gun a little bit on this. Personal opinion.
Any further questions of Mr. Bates by the committee? Anything else, Mr. Bates?
No, I again appreciate the opportunity to be here and work with you. Thank you.
Okay, if you'll stand by, I'm assuming you're here for the committee meeting, aren't you?
If you'll let me sit in the audience, I'll be right there for you,
Senator. I'm glad you're here. Next person I'd like to call up is Terry Camry. Ms. Camry, if you'd identify yourself, who you represent, and give your presentation.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm Terry Camry. I'm a planner with the City and Borough of Juneau, representing the Juneau Coastal District. I've been involved in the Coastal Management Program beginning in 2000 and at full role as a coastal planner since 2001. So seeing this go through certainly the full range of changes and drama the past number of years, and it's been interesting to follow all of this. I'd like to speak in support of HB 161, the current work draft, and I really appreciate Senator Olson's work on this and bringing up these issues. I think generally the major changes in the bill are a positive step forward in correcting a lot of problems created in the Coastal Management Program under the Murkowski administration. And it seems to me that the Palin administration has taken a very different approach in working on a proactive relationship with local governments. And I see this bill as part of that approach. From my perspective as a city planner, I see that the coastal program as a key element in providing this coordinated review process and facilitating involvement among all the reviewing entities, and that's its value. It puts all these different permitting processes into one package. It puts it together for the developer and for the local government and agencies to put it all in one package, and really reduces a lot of time overall for everybody, and that's a great value under this that program. And with this in mind, I think the major changes in the bill really make a lot of sense, and first and foremost, putting DEC back into the process. Taking them out of the process, I have to say, is one of the changes that truly mystified me in 2003. I couldn't see how that would streamline the process in any way. You remove air and water quality from habitat review and completely separate that out, it just creates a whole range of problems. First issue is that you can't determine what the scope of the project is. If you can't include air and water quality issues, how can you tell what's under review in the first place? So that's a point of confusion for coastal districts. It's a point of confusion for the DNR staff in determining what's under review in the first place. Beyond that, how are the other reviewing entities to separate out air and water quality from their review? I can hardly think of a single habitat issue that doesn't affect certainly water quality in some form or another. I can also give you a number of examples where this has really specifically screwed up the review process. Here in Juneau specifically, we have five impaired salmon streams. And when you have an impaired salmon stream, DEC puts together what's called a TMDL document, which is a document that determines how that water body is going to be managed to reduce the impact. Well, say you have a development along that salmon stream. It's under the ACMP review process. Well, clearly the TMDL document under DEC's review is a critical part of that review. So we actually had a case a number of months ago, very long and difficult review on a controversial project along a salmon stream that was going to have a direct impact on the stream. And the ACMP review process was completed. It was approved. It got its full ACMP consistency determination. It was approved by the CBJ Planning Commission. And then DEC denied the project. DEC had good reasons for denying the project. I'm not faulting them. But that just shows a very clear example of how that can throw a wrench into the process. DEC's information was really important to that review, and certainly it did no favors to the applicant to have that information come out after the review is completed. So again, from my perspective as a city planner, I see the problems with the DEC carve-out from the ACMP review process on a regular basis. I think that's a critical point to include that. Regarding reinstatement of the Coastal Policy Council, I think that's another critical point for the same reason that it provides broader representation in the program. When you have a point of controversy, whether it's over approval of a district plan or some other issue, it just doesn't make sense to consolidate all that authority in the hands of a single agency. To me, that was the approach of the Murkowski administration, is to consolidate that power and authority. Again, I see the Palin administration taking a very different perspective, and I think reinstatement of the Coastal Policy Council is a important part of that. Again, my understanding is that it would have the same representation as the former Coastal Policy Council, which include district representation, agency representation, as well as the DNR commissioner, and would give a much much more balanced view on controversial issues. It, you know, it wouldn't change the day-to-day implementation of the program, which should stay in the hands of those who know it best, which is DNR. And then lastly, the changes regarding district policy approval are very important, I believe. I haven't studied the bill in detail, but on the basic point of just clarifying that districts can have policies that don't specifically duplicate state and federal law, that's in the current plan, but there's a whole bunch of other language in there that muddies the question. And I won't even go into that those details you would glaze over in a minute, but that's created loads of problems for DNR, and I feel for them. You know, they had a hard time because they had a bad bill followed by bad regulations, and they were charged with implementing that. It was very, very hard to come up with consistent interpretations, and the changes in this bill, I think, go a long way toward clarifying that. In Juneau's case, just the simple statement, districts may have policies that don't duplicate state or federal law, that in combination with eliminating the very, very strict requirements on designations, that would have taken 2 years off of our plan approval process. Again, you know, Juneau is considered a success story because we did go through mediation and we were successful in the mediation. We completed that process just this last fall. But we went through a very, very difficult process to get there. And while I'm pleased with the outcome of that, to some extent I really feel it was unnecessary because the case was there from the very beginning. What we were suffering from was a badly written law and badly written regulations. So I guess the last thing I'd like to state is that with all due respect to Mr. Bates, I believe these changes are too important to be left to regulation. I really think these changes need to be put forward in statute so they can be implemented immediately. I think for the benefit of the districts, for the benefit of the reviewing agencies, and ultimately for the benefit of the applicant. So that concludes my testimony. I'm really pleased to be here today, and thank you for holding this meeting.
Thank you very much, Ms. Camry. One of the things I want to ask you, since the CBJ has gone through the mediation process, what, and you've kind of alluded to that you came out with it in the end, what has been your experience with that process besides your view that maybe parts of it were unnecessary?
Well,
is it a fair process? Is it something that you recommend, or do you understand the reasons that the other three unsuccessful districts have not been able to come to a satisfactory end?
Just
give me your ideas on what your experience has been.
Sure. That's a tough question. I'll answer it as best I can. I certainly cannot deny that it wasn't challenging.
Sure.
It was very challenging. It took a very long time just to get the mediation set up in the first place.
Mm-hmm.
We were pleased with the mediator and the mediator's approach to things. Certainly, it came with a lot of frustration. We felt that the changing interpretations continued on through the mediation process. The issues that we started out with debating over, were not the ones we were debating over in the end. We did not have the same reasons for denial of our policies that we started out with.
Mm-hmm.
So that was difficult and frustrating. It did work out in the end. I'm pleased that we went through it. I'm not familiar with all the issues that the other districts are mediating about. Juneau was very specific on mediating for the Juneau Wetland Management Plan.
Thank you very much, Senator Stevens.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you, Terry, for your comments. I want to go back to your thoughts on the Coastal Policy Council and make sure I don't misunderstand how that council works. It seems to me that it is pretty critical to the whole issue that I see the council as a forum, not necessarily as a power over the department. So could you comment? I mean, is this if this council were reinstated as indicated in this CS, Would it in fact be a threat to DNR, or would it in fact be more of a forum? Any comments on that?
I appreciate the question, Senator Stevens. I am not certain I am the very best person to respond to that question because I don't have a lot of experience with how the Coastal Policy Council works. But my understanding is that the CPC would have a critical role in plan approval. And again, the DNR commissioner is still involved in that, so I don't see that as taking away the commissioner's authority so much as having broader democratic representation on areas that may become controversial. But it's not an area that I'm knowledgeable on, so I have to acknowledge that.
Senator Stevens,
go ahead.
Terry. I appreciate your comments, and that is my understanding, but I may be wrong too.
Sure.
So I'll look forward to hearing more about how the council would be implemented and what its responsibility would be and how it fits into the whole process. But I would not see it as a threat to the DNR. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Any further questions of Ms. Camry? Thank you very much for your testimony this afternoon. Next, we'll go to our line people, and we've got Johnny Aiken from the North Slope Borough. Mr. Aiken, are you on?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, I'm on. Can you hear me?
Yes, you're coming in kind of quiet, but if you could just speak up and then identify yourself and then tell us who you represent and go ahead with your testimony.
Okay, can you hear me better?
You're much better now.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. Mm-hmm. For the record, my name is Johnny Aiken, director of the North Slope Borough's Department of Planning and Community Services. I appreciate this opportunity to speak with you today about the work draft of Senate Bill 161 that is under consideration by this committee. The North Slope Borough supports this draft of Senate Bill 161. It would solve many of the problems we have faced during the past few years as the Murkowski administration implemented changes to the Alaska Coastal Management Program. While it may not restore everything in the original program, this draft fixes some aspects of the coastal management program that fall far short of the program's intent. The North Slope Borough supports responsible resource development, and for over 20 years, the Alaska Coastal Management Program helped to establish a balance between development and protection of coastal resources. The program was useful in gaining local support for development projects because it gave local communities a forum for their concerns about potential impacts. Since the changes were implemented, the Alaska Coastal Management Program has lost its balance and its ability to generate local support. Almost all of our proposed enforceable policies have been denied by the state, so we have been forced to rely on our Title 19 planning and zoning processes. While this permitting process is an effective tool, it does not allow us the opportunities to the former coastal management program to work cooperatively with the state and federal agencies in developing compatible permit stipulations. The work draft before the committee would help restore a meaningful coastal management program. Most importantly, it would make clear that coastal districts can establish meaningful enforceable policies, the policies that we can use. We believe House Bill 191 passed in 2003 would have made this possible. but the regulations adopted by the previous administration eliminated this possibility. For example, only 4 of the 37 policies we proposed for our coastal plan revision were approved, and we were told that the remaining policies, the 4 that were approved, must be changed significantly before they could be approved. The work draft also puts air and water quality permits back into the coastal management program process. Since the Alaska Department of Environmental Conservation permits have been removed from the coastal consistency review process, there has been a lot of confusion, and I appreciate Terry's comments on this. For example, we have been told that we can no longer comment on the effects of potential oil spill on habitat or subsistence under the carve-out. The North Slope Borough also supports the provision in the work draft to reestablish the Coastal Policy Council. The former council played a big role in achieving policy balance because it was composed of state government staff and locally elected officials. Finally, the work draft makes it clear that all outer continental shelf activities affecting coastal resources or uses would be considered in the ACMP reviews. As a result of changes to the program in recent years, some effects of offshore oil and gas activities are no longer considered. I am very encouraged by this work draft that you are proposing, Senator Olson, and I hope the committee will look favorably on it. Again, I appreciate the chance to speak with you, and thank you, Mr. Chairman. I look forward to a fair and positive change. Thank you very much.
Do you have any questions of Mr. Aiken by any members of the committee? Thank you very much, Mr. Aiken, for coming online this afternoon. And the one question that I have for you as far as the formal evaluation of these ACMP regulations, are you aware or are you familiar with the comment that the intent for their review was going to start a year after June 30th of 2008?
I wouldn't leave it up to them to wait that long.
Can you run that by me again, Mr. Chairman?
I understand that there was a letter that was written from the department signed by one of the deputy directors that stated that the formal evaluation of these ACMP regulations was not going to start until a year after the June 30th, 2008.
I don't know that I can answer that question. Gordon Brower is here with me, and he may be able to answer that if you have no objections.
Mr. Brower, are you online, sir?
Yes, I'm here. I think there was a little bit of talk about this earlier when Randy Bates was on, and I think the timeline that they're looking at, I'm not familiar with it, but it seems to me to revisit that and work it under regulation after some period of time that we've had a chance to test what DNR has done already, I think it doesn't make any sense. And at this point, having been through the process for many years now with, you know, all due respect to Randy, you know, Randy's been steering this quite a bit from the back then, and having set bar after bar, and it changed the regulation on us, I would really frown from waiting on something like that, but make it into a legislation that they have to act on it. From what we've experienced up here and maybe many of the districts, if you leave it up to through regulation, that's easy for it to be altered.
Mr. Brower, just to make sure that we've got you online, you need to identify yourself and tell us who you're with.
My name's Gordon Brower. I work with the North Slope Borough Planning and Community Services as a land management regulations manager.
Okay. Thank you very much for your input. Any questions of Mr. Brower by the members of the committee? Thank you very much, Mr. Brower, and thank you for turning out this afternoon. Our next person is Tom Okalisic, who is with the Northwest Arctic Borough. Mr. Okalisic, are you on?
I'm here.
If you could just come a little closer to the mic, we'll be able to hear you a little bit better, and then identify yourself, tell us who you're with, and then go ahead with your testimony.
Sure. Unchalotak, Uvunga Atiga Ukliasak. I'm Tom Okalisic, and I'm the planning director for the Northwest Arctic Borough. Am I loud enough?
You're loud and clear, sir.
Okay, arriga. Te ku to you, Senator Olson, and also members of the Community and Regional Affairs Committee for this opportunity to provide testimony. The Northwest Arctic Borough supports the draft Senate Bill 161 that was distributed, and we encourage the committee to adopt it. We believe this draft would resolve most of the problems our borough has had in getting approval of our coastal management plan. The Northwest Arctic Borough submitted our final draft for our coastal management plan to the Department of Natural Resources in September 2006. However, only one of 51 proposed enforceable policies were approved. And all areas proposed for historic, prehistoric designations were denied, and only one small subsistence area or use area was approved. The borough is very supportive of resource development. However, it needs to be in due consideration of incorporated issues and standards to subsistence as well as other uses and resources. Because of our borough's unique lifestyle being dependent upon subsistence, and our proposed subsistence areas being mostly denied, we felt we had no choice but to request mediation of the decision of our plan, which has yet to be approved, and we've been waiting for 2 years. The Senate bill draft before the committee, I think, would also fix three important problems related to the implementation to the Coastal Zone Management Program. First, it would make it clear that coastal districts can develop meaningful, enforceable policies. Second, the draft would reinstate the formal Coastal Policy Council. And third, the draft would bring air and water quality issues back into the ACMP consistency review process. So, te ku for letting this testify, and we encourage you to continue forward with this bill.
Do we have any questions from the committee, Mr. Okalisic? Tom, just so I get an idea, what is your thought process? You made a comment that you've been waiting 2 years for mediation to, I guess, get underway, or so far. What is your thought on the mediation process, which is really the only way you can appeal some of these decisions?
You know, the mediation process, this is the first time, I believe, in the program's history it's actually being utilized. And that's to tell you about the changes that happened to the program under the last administration. There was never mediation before. And so I think the mediation process is everyone is feeling their way through it, and it is very time-consuming. But development and consistency reviews don't wait for that. All the workload continues to pile up despite this additional process that is very, very slow.
Okay. Thank you very much. If there are no further questions, we'll go ahead and go on to our next person, which is Bud Cassidy from Kodiak. Mr. Cassidy, are you online?
Yes, I am, Mr. Chairman. And thank you for the opportunity to speak today. And thanks for considering changes to SB SB 161, changes that the borough would generally support.
Mr. Cassidy, before we get too far,
I'm the recent planning director of the Kodiak Island Borough. The borough would agree to any bill that tries to achieve a more balanced and cooperative relationship between the state and the borough through our coastal management plan. Do we currently have a balanced and cooperative relationship? I think rarely would be the answer. Our role, even under our new plan, will be limited. We view that by having a new plan, it allows us to have a seat at the table, but we'll have very little to say at that table, except to quote state regulations, and regulations that are interpreted not by the borough, but by the state. You know, frankly, we find that our local planning and zoning codes will serve us better in having input on an issue. The ACMP program has really become a centralized process, almost a one-size-fits-all program. Certainly, there are some administrative advantages to administering a one-size-fits-all program, but in a borough or a state that has miles of diverse coastline with communities that also differ substantially, one size that fits all just does not work. We want an opportunity to comment on projects. The borough may not have the expertise to comment, but we certainly have local experts. We have commercial fishermen. We have native populations that need to be consulted and will provide meaningful information during a fact-finding trip. We find Mr. Bates' comments about reevaluating the program heartening, but I would think that a timeline is needed. As I said, we have a plan that has made it through DNR and on its way to OCRM to be approved. We're just concerned about what is really in the plan. Again, our goal was to try to have a seat at the table. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. If there's any questions, I will be happy to answer them.
Actually, Mr. Cassidy, if you could state your name for the record and who you're with.
Thank you. My name is Bud Cassidy, and I'm the planning director for the Kodiak Island Borough.
Any questions of Mr. Cassidy before we, from the members of the committee? Senator Stevens.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman, and hi, Bud. I'm glad you're on today to talk about this. Any further comments on that Coastal Policy Council? Do you see that as an efficient way to get local input and, as you talked about, balancing cooperation into the coastal zone management?
Thank you, Senator Stevens. Probably the comment I would make is the earlier comment that the Coastal Policy Council would consist of a diverse group of individuals that would mediate in cases in conflicts with DNR. So I guess I would agree that the less centralized we make a program like this, the better, and that's where I think the Coastal Policy Council fits in.
Thank you, Bud. Were you on that council, or was that the city manager?
No, generally I think it was a gentleman from Port Lyons for the longest time, Tim, and I can't remember his last name, or Senator Stevens.
Okay, thank you.
But not me.
Senator Thomas.
No, I just look like I have a question. I'm still trying to figure out the makeup of the board here. But anyhow, go ahead, or that policy committee.
Okay, if there's no further questions, Mr. Cassidy, thank you very much for coming out this afternoon and paying attention. Our next one is going to be Gary Stevens Gary Williams.
I'd be glad to take an opportunity to testify. No.
From Soldotna and Kenai, Mr. Williams, please.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. My name is Gary Williams. I am the Kenai Peninsula Borough Coastal District Coordinator. I want to offer a few prepared comments in support of SB 161, but before I do, I want to say how much I appreciate the challenges that the division director and his staff faced with HB 191, but let's recognize that it was a product of HB 191, which we are here to try to correct in its essence and in its unanticipated consequences. Well, my comments today are related principally to Section 19 amendments. And I'd also acknowledge that any set of policies that haven't been reviewed or revised for 15 years, as in the case of the Kenai Peninsula Borough's coastal program need to be reconsidered. And with this in mind, I supported the call for an update to our coastal management program. And to that extent, HB 91 was a good thing. But what was not a good thing was that it legislated in terms of the process. Leaving aside the issue of the reasons the governor and key legislators set out to eviscerate the ACMP, I'll just focus on a couple of issues I found most difficult in the process. First, and with all due respect to my friends at the division, the legislation gave the staff too little guidance in the language of the law. For example, the legislation calls for district plans to use precise and enforceable language. Seems simple on the face of it, but when writing a policy that is to be implemented on the ground, what you may think is precise and enforceable may differ from my interpretation, particularly when I'm the one who has to enforce it. And it's particularly one-sided when the terms are not negotiable, and more particularly problematic when our language was, in some cases, more precise than DNR would allow. Second, HB 191 says that a district may not have a policy that is adequately addressed in state or federal law. The key word is adequately. Again, what someone in Juneau may think is adequate may differ from someone who's trying to write a policy for a specific issue of local concern. But the word adequately meant only what DNR said it meant. Finally, anyone who thinks that HB 91 was a fix for the problems the legislature identified in coastal management needs to consider that the ACMP program revisions still haven't taken place as far as I am concerned, because despite having submitted the Kenai Peninsula Borough's amendment in September of 2006, I still don't have an approved program, although our plan amendment is one of those pending at OCRM. The committee substitute addresses these problems and would create a coastal policy council to manage the Alaska Coastal Management Program. And I also want to say that I support the statements in both the sponsor statement and the statement of the Alaska Coastal District Association, which is dated September 21st, 2007. Thanks for the opportunity to testify.
Thank you very much, Mr. Williams. Any questions of Mr. Williams by the members of the committee? Is there anybody else in the audience that wants to go ahead and testify on this bill? Or is there anybody else online that wants to go ahead and testify on this bill? It's 5 o'clock.
Oh, I'm sorry. This is Lindsay Walter with the Department of Law. I just had a couple of things to add quickly at the end. I don't want to go on too long.
Ms. Walter, go ahead.
As Randy Bates said, we got this bill late last week, so I've looked through it, and I want to address one of the concerns about what the Coastal Policy Council's role will be. My read of this draft is sort of picking up all of the duties that DCOM, Department of Coastal and Ocean Management, currently does, picks it up and moves it to the council. It's composed of 9 members of the public and then 5 members of state government. And there's nothing in there about staff, which I understand was part of the previous CPC, where sort of the staff would be what DCOM does. They were the ones that did the reviews, wrote regulations, and then it would be sort of filtered through the council. And the way the draft is written now, it sounds like that's not the way it's set up currently. Excuse me, I'm getting dry throat. And one other big issue that I have with this is the way the draft is written currently, it says that the commissioner will appoint the members that are public members to the council. And because this is such, the council is going to be writing regulations and that sort of thing as currently written under the draft, those appointments need to be made by the governor, not a commissioner. There's never been any kind of board or council, to my knowledge, or anyone at the Department of Law's knowledge, that has members of the public writing regulations that were not appointed by a governor in the past. So those are sort of the 2 big things that jump out to me that I wanted to comment on before we close today.
Any questions, Ms. Walter, by any members of the committee? You certainly bring up a good point there, and we'll be looking at that makeup there. Ms. Walther, thank you very much for coming out this afternoon.
Thank you very much.
Okay, before we close, I'd like to give the opportunity to the Deputy Director to go ahead and respond maybe with some closing comments. We're going to hold this bill today, and I just invite you back up to say, since you're the person that is kind of in charge of what's going on here, and I think that people should realize that you have superiors over you that are giving you direction, so that you're in a kind of a precarious position.
Senator Olson, Chairman, thank you for the opportunity to come back up and address the committee. Certainly, I appreciate the testimony that's been offered by the coastal districts, and I've heard the concerns as they've been expressed over the last several years, and I've heard the pain that some of the changes have caused. The issues that they do bring up and that you're attempting to address within this legislation are real. As I mentioned, we know what these issues are. We're committed to looking at them and evaluating them. Again, while we've looked at the bill, the committee substitute, version C, we don't have a section-by-section analysis for you. As I mentioned, there are some challenges within the bill. There are some concerns that we have, and unless we have the opportunity to work with you either in committee or outside, we don't have a position, but we remain concerned with the bill itself. With that, those are my if I could, I would just like to again applaud you for representing your constituents and bringing this bill and staying abreast of the coastal management issues and staying interested, and again for the committee to take this bill up and allow us to talk about the program and the reform effort and how it's going. Thank you.
Mr. Bates, thank you very much for your willingness to go ahead and work with us. We'll certainly have staff time that is available to fine-tune this so it's a much more streamlined situation than it was before. We have questions from Senator Stevens.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. It's been a very powerful discussion here. I really like the Coastal Policy Council. I think that's a great forum for communities to be involved. And I would appreciate your looking at this draft very, very carefully and making sure that it accomplishes what I think it should accomplish. And this may not be totally include everything, but I think it's important that there be a council. I think we've heard that it's a critical element, that it is a forum, that it not be a threat to DNR. That's not the intention. It's not my intention that the council takes over the responsibility of DNR. It should play a big role, though, and it brings about more cooperation and a balance. It gives the communities a seat at the table. It allows them to comment on the projects with local knowledge and local experience and expertise. And I take into account the comments of the your staff attorney, I think, or Ms. Waltham anyway, and her comments that about the appointment by the governor, not by the commissioners, and her comment about picking up the duties of the staff and moving them to the council. That's certainly not my intention. So would you look at this carefully and help us through this and see if there's a way that we can bring back a council, which I think would be advantageous to both you and to our communities? And I appreciate your comments on that. Senator, not now, but later. Yeah.
If I could, just Senator Stevens through the chair, thank you. We will look at that. I think our attorney, Assistant Attorney General Lindsay Walter, did bring up two important points quickly on the staffing issue. This was a provision in the old statutes, pre-HB 191. There was a provision in there which identified the former Division of Governmental Coordination as the staff to the council. Without that, what you've set up as the CPC is a 9-member body of elected officials, being the mayors or assembly, and 5 commissioners meeting to decide the fate of each and every project that is currently conducted in Alaska. I don't think that's your intent, and if it is, they may be busy. So that's certainly one issue to look at. The other, just quick history again, is I've been with the program since 1997. I've made several presentations to the former CPC. I have some decent insight on how they worked and how successful they were in what they did and how they governed a program. So again, you're probably talking to the right person with a little bit of history here. So I appreciate the opportunity to look at that for you, and I will bring some information back.
Senator Stevens, is that it?
Well, thank you. I appreciate that.
Mr. Bates, thank you very much for coming up. And with that, we'll go ahead and hold this bill, and we'll hear it again on February 5th, Tuesday at 3:30 p.m. With that, we're adjourned.